Južna hemisfera.
Predočamo zgodbe ljudi in družb iz južne poloble.
Vsako drugo sredo.
Točno opoldne. Drage poslušalke, cenjeni poslušalci, lepo pozdravljeni na valovih Radio Študent v novi oddaji Južna hemisfera. Ta oddaja bo seveda se posvečala južni polobli, dogajanju med ljudmi in v družbah, o katerih skozi množične medije le redko slišimo ustrezne novice. Zato uvodno oddajo, za prvo oddajo, pa nekoliko širši pogled od različnih ljudi, začenši seveda z domačim pragom, z dr. Uršolo Lipovec Čebron iz oddelka Filozofske fakultete za etnologijo in kulturno antropologijo. Torej, kaj in čemu govoriti o južni polobli?
Torej, ja, lahko bi rekli, da v bistvu živimo v času, ki je ne samo evropocentričen, že dolgo časa ne, ampak severnocentričen. Ne? Pravzaprav se obnašamo, kakor da v bistvu južne kadele sveta sploh ni, oziroma nas ne zanima. Zato pa tudi dobimo zelo skope fragmentarne informacije o tem in smo v bistvu zavedeni vaš čas. Pravzaprav ne vidimo južnega dela sveta kot vir pomembnih informacij, inovacij, inspiracij, kot nečesa, bi v bistvu lahko, iz katerega bi se lahko zelo veliko učili.
Sledi izjava gospe Laure Carlson iz Mexico Cityja, iz Mehike, kjer predseduje ameriškemu programu Centru za mednarodno politiko. Kakšno je njeno gledišče?
We're living in a time when information plays a particularly prominent role in policy making and the way that people view the world and even their own communities. But one of the biggest challenges in that is that it's also a time when the mainstream media is increasingly monopolized and concentrated by a few very, very powerful companies, not only within countries, but on a global level as well. And these companies have specific interests. And so they have specific interests in covering certain types of news and ignoring other types, or in covering certain types of news from a particular political perspective. This particularly affects what we learn about the Global South if we live in the North, and if we live in the Global South, what we learn about ourselves and our relationship to the rest of the world. There tends to be, in general, a lack of coverage of what's happening in the Global South in developing countries. There tends to be a perspective that all that's important are the major wealthy countries that are running the global economy, and that the fact that the Global South doesn't have a voice is just a natural consequence of its poverty and backwardness. This, of course, is grossly unfair, and it also creates global policies that are skewed in favor of those wealthy countries. One of the reasons also that it's so important to cover the Global South is because we're seeing a change from a world that was basically unipolar, and the United States had undisputed military and economic power, to a world that's multipolar, in which those emerging countries that you mentioned and others have a larger and larger role to play. However, within that, we can't just see things in terms of national boundaries, because we're also seeing this growing division between the haves and have-nots. We're seeing that throughout the world, inequality is growing within countries, whether it's developed countries or developing countries. This means that it's increasingly important to analyze on the sub-national level what's happening within countries and to look at the impact that some of those global policies are having, not just differential impact between the global north and the global south, but also within countries, how they're affecting the poor and how they're affecting the rich. And this, again, is a type of coverage that we tend not to see very often. It's been coming up, and in fact, part of the protests of the so-called 99%, the Occupy movement, the Indignados, their protest against this vision of the world that essentially says, we don't, you don't exist, or if you do, we'd rather not hear about it.
Začeli smo s centrizmom severne poloble, pa se vseeno vrnimo k dr. Uršili Lipovec-Šebron, ki pravi, da vseeno v akademski sferi vsaj obstaja neko odprtost do južne hemisfere.
Kar nekaj raziskovalcev v Sloveniji vemo za ta gibanja, vemo za te inovacije in mislim, da je veliko recimo pomembnih praks, ki se dogaja, ki se so vse dogajale in se dogajajo recimo v Latinski Ameriki, ki kljubujejo neoliberalizmu zelo uspešno. In mislim, da s tem, ko ne vemo, ko ne poznamo teh praks, teh teorij, teh drugačnih možnosti bivanja, smo krnjeni, no? Mislim, imamo mogoče tudi premalo ne samo informacije, ampak tudi znanja o tem, kako živeti tako, da dejansko ne samo kljubujemo neoliberalizmu, ampak dejansko ustvarjamo neke nove prostore, kjer v bistvu bi lahko drugače živeli v skupnosti.
Nadaljujemo s gospodom Praful Bidwajem, žurnalistom iz Indije, političnim analitikom in večdesetletnim aktivistom za razno razne pravice, predvsem pa za prekinitev z oboroževanjem, nuklearnim oboroževanjem in siceršnjim oboroževanjem velikih držav. Ta pa nam bo predstavil, kakšna je še danes razlika med južno in pa severno poloblo v smislu osnovnih pogojih bivanja.
If you look at the aggregate numbers, the north still dominates. The economy, global politics, and political affairs and security affairs. In ways that are very disproportionate to its own population, its own size. So a country like the Netherlands, for instance, which has a population of 15 million, has almost as much wealth, has more wealth than, say, South Africa, or half as much as India. So those differences are very important. In terms of trade, the north again continues to be dominant, although the south is now making more inroads into the global trade order. So these gross inequalities remain. The United States, in military terms, is the world's dominant power. It spends about half of the entire world's military budget itself. Is the only country of the world whose armed forces patrol all the seven seas all the time, 24 hours, and which can mount a day or nighttime attack and fight two global wars simultaneously. So this proportion is very, very big. Its nuclear arsenal remains the second biggest in the world and certainly the most sophisticated one. So these differences are very important. The North continues to dominate the Security Council and the most effective body within the United Nations system. So there is really a, you know, and the differences, the average differences between the global North and the South have not narrowed, particularly either in terms of political power or economic power or information flows. The North controls some more than 95% of the flow of information across the world. So these are all very big differences that remain. The terms of trade for the South's exports, which are primary commodities, have turned adversely vis-a-vis the North's industrial exports. Right, except for a short period during the 70s, at the time of the oil price boom, this has been a trend for a century now. And these inequalities in the global order between North and South have not been addressed.
Nadaljuje Laura Carlson iz Mehike. Čemu se ljudje severne in južne poloble vse bolj povezujejo?
There are increasing alliances between people in the global south and in the global north, because with the economic crisis on a global level, what's happened is that it's had a hardest impact on workers and on common people within all countries. And it's made it very clear that there is an economic elite, a global economic elite, that is benefiting from the current system at the cost of the vast majority of the people. So as even people in the North recognize that their own privilege is not so secure, and that much of the wealth of their own countries is rising upward, and it's leaving their schools without funding, it's leaving them without public services, it's leaving them without jobs, they're finding that they have much more in common with the global South than they ever imagined. And some of those people that are becoming organized, as we mentioned, in the Occupy movement and in other movements, are looking, in fact, to countries within the global South that have already taken on these problems of poverty and inequality and have begun to think of new answers. So now we find a reversal in which the common idea that it was the rich and developed countries that held the answers to improving the well-being for the planet and for people across the planet has been reversed, and many people are looking to developing countries where major problems have not been solved, but where at least there are innovative solutions being proposed that are better for the majority and that are also better for the survival of the planet, which is now becoming a major concern with climate change and everything else too. So I think there's really a lot of changes going on, and although they're very painful for so many people, they have a lot of potential to change the way we see our world and hopefully the direction in which we take it.
Nadaljuje Laura, in sicer glede politike latinskoameriških držav do ekonomskih vprašanj.
On the one hand, there are clearly countries that are willing to sign these free trade agreements with the United States, that are willing to create alliances with the U.S. government and be part of its area of hegemony within the continent. On the other hand, there are countries like Brazil, Argentina, the Andean countries, Bolivia and Ecuador, and of course Cuba, who want to remain outside that hegemony of the United States, who want to remain more independent. And they're looking to build more South-South ties. In these countries, although it's true that there's clearly an identifiable elite in most of these countries that's benefiting from economic benefits, which is usually the case, there have also been, in many of these countries, significant efforts to redistribute wealth through government programs to the poor that have actually been significantly successful. And so you see that going on as well, although there isn't a clear break with the capitalist system. There's this process of redistributing wealth through the government, through the state itself, that's had some progress in some areas. So we've been watching, as have, of course, people in all the countries, to see to what degree the success of rising southern countries will, in fact, benefit the people within those countries, or to what degree it could end up just creating, again, a handful of very powerful oligarchies that receive the vast majority of the benefits from their economic achievements.
Nadaljujemo z Praful Bidwajem in obsesijo Indije, da se prilagaja ekonomskim modelom severa.
Yes, I think it's obsessed with trying to get global recognition. It is obsessed with continuing with its neoliberal economic policies which discriminate against the poor, which are increasing disparities within the country, and which are not leading to reduction of poverty. The whole idea that rapid growth would produce some kind of a miracle through a trickle-down effect is now completely discredited. And even establishment economists are now agreed that the assumption is wrong and that things are not going well.
Nadaljujemo s Praful Bidvajem. Kakšen vpliv je na življenja množic imela ta sprememba?
What you see from a distance is an India that is growing at 7%, 8% or whatever. Its military might is increasing, is attracting 10 times more foreign investment than it did 10 or 15 years ago. It's $50 billion plus every year now, which is a lot of money. But none of this is reflected in what is happening domestically within India. Poverty has remained persistent. Malnutrition affects 42% of the population. 48% of India's children are undernourished and underweight. And these ratios have not changed in spite of the last two decades of rapid growth, the fastest such period in recent history. So there is obviously a structural imbalance, many structural imbalances within the Indian economy, which ensures that the fruits of growth go only to the top 10%, 15% of the population, and the rest of the population has experienced absolutely no improvement or marginal improvement in its standards of living, in incomes, in employment, in access to public services, and so on. So for us in India, all this talk of India emerging as a great power and so on doesn't mean a lot.
Torej, poslušali smo nekaj izjav iz Mehike, Indije, pa tudi Slovenije. Nadaljujemo pa z neljubim dogodkom, ki se je zgodil v začetku meseca. Namreč na konferenco o krizi v Evropi in svetu je bil povabljen dolgoletni aktivist, akademik, ponovem tudi politik, poslanec filipinskega parlamenta Walden Bellow. O njegovemu pogledu na krizo v Evropi si lahko kaj več pogledate na stari strani Radio Študent v arhivu iz leta 2009, ko se je kriza zgodila. Ta, ki je bil, torej Walden Bellow, ki je bil povabljen v Brusel, da Evropi ponudi tudi južno perspektivo na probleme, ki tarajo svet. Tega ni mogel storiti, saj so mu belgijski policisti, cariniki prepovedali vstop. To se je zgodilo navkljub jasnim pravilom Evropske unije, ki so seveda taki, da katerikoli politik prijateljske države, ki poseduje diplomatski pasoš v Evropsko unijo, lahko vstopi brez vize. Walden Bellow je prispel na letališče Brusla 4. maja z diplomatskim pasošem, vendar pa mu cariniki in policisti vstopa niso dovolili in ga poslali nazaj v svoj rodni kraj, temelječ, da mora naslednjič imeti s seboj vizo. Navkljub temu, da je zunanje ministrstvo Belgije posredovalo in od notranjega ministrstva zahtevalo, da ta vstopi. Notranje ministrstvo se ni odzvalo, zahtevi zunanjega in pač Walden Bellow ni bil zmožen podati svoje perspektive na krizo. Poslušajmo pa si krajšo izjavo predstavnice Transnational Instituta, ki je Walden Bellow povabil.
Philippines intervened, and then also the, as you said, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Belgium basically came out to say that they are supportive of just issuing him a border visa, because clearly his purpose is just to stay for 2 days in Brussels for a conference, and there is really no reason to treat him as any a security threat or as a person that would stay in Brussels for an indefinite period of time for work or for an, for employment whatsoever. So it was really, I guess we're just completely surprised that, you know, on the basis of these clear evidence of his purpose for coming to Brussels, that he should be denied a border visa.
Poslušali ste oddajo Južna hemisfera, v kateri vam bomo v prihodnje skušali posredovati kar se da avtentične in za vas pomembne zgodbe, predvsem pa za ljudi iz južne hemisfere pomembne zgodbe. Toliko za danes, naslišanje čez 2 tedna. Južna hemisfera.
Predučamo zgodbe ljudi in družbe iz južne polobli.
Vsako drugo sredo,
točno opoldne.